Hello, listener. This is Srinath Sripath, and we've got a Talking T20 special lined up for you. 30 minutes of Rahul Dravid talking about captaincy, life as a T20 coach, and holding forth on a range of topics, including how a lucky event could have prolonged his test career. Rahul was part of a panel discussion at the launch of ESPN Cricket Info Superstats, more on which later. He was joined by Sanjay Manjrekar, who spoke about the changing world of T20 broadcasting powered by data analytics. You'll hear from me and T20 analyst Gaurav Sundararaman, who is part of the team that built Superstats, from time to time on this episode. But without further ado, over to Dravid and Co. from the event.
So let me first ask both of you, just first thoughts on what you've just seen patiently and attentively heard. What do you make of it, Rahul?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And I think I've had this conversation with Sambit a lot, especially in relationship to T20 cricket, you know, sort of just having played a little bit of T20 cricket at the back end of my career and then getting involved, you know, with the sort of the auction process and coaching, mentoring teams. I think one of the frustrations really for a lot of us, if you can call us on the other side of the fence, so to speak, the, you know, the people involved in coaching and setting up teams. And when you sort of read articles or you read comments about T20 cricket, you sometimes felt that, you know, people were not getting it. Or there was a sense of frustration that sometimes the stats that were being used were quite outdated. The comments were based on numbers and stats that were sometimes being used to sort of used for one day cricket or used for test matches, and people would, you know, use the sort of the set stats that had been used or the set averages or strike rates.
And for you, that didn't do justice to the...
It didn't do justice, I think, to sometimes, as coaches, not only for, I guess, on reading of the game, but you are looking for something more as well. If you're looking to analyze a game, if you're looking for more information on a game, if you're looking as a coach to make decisions on a game or decisions on selection, you sometimes felt that, you know, the old stats didn't do it. So there was a sense of frustration. So it's really good that, you know, people are looking at this very differently. It'll be really interesting to see how this goes and how this, what this leads into. But yeah, definitely that over the last few years, we've seen people definitely recognize that the T20 game is different and it needs different metrics. It needs different statistics. And it's, you know, it's fantastic to see people are doing the work behind getting that out.
Before I move on, I'd like to clarify that in no way are we asking either Rahul or Sanjay to endorse the product, mainly because we can't afford them for endorsement. Generally, that we're asking for honest views here, and we're talking about the marriage between data and cricket. But yes, Sanjay, just first thoughts.
Actually, my worst fear has come true today. The nerds are taking over the game.
This
I
is
was
your
worried
worst
about
fear.
This.
This is your worst fear.
Yes, I mean, this was my worst fear. It's finally happened. But on a serious note, you know, I think Paul King is here from Star. Star had done a show 3-4 years back called The Guru versus The Geek.
The Guru so versus the Geek.
The Geek. Hmm. Guru is that cricket romantic who's played the game, has no time for numbers. And then you have the Geek who's only about numbers. And I was given the name of being Gurik because I was both. And to be very honest, I mean, I'm fascinated by numbers. When I'm doing commentary, my best friend is the stats man sitting next to me. So I've always liked the support of numbers. These days, I'm even more confident with my criticism of people, because I use data as well to back it up. So that helps. The most important thing is how you balance or how you use the numbers to come to the right conclusions on the game and performances, selection, everything. Let's not forget with every Rahul Dravid, the coach, with time for numbers and his intelligence, there's also Chandrakant Pandit. He's a very successful coach, 2 consecutive Ranji titles, who doesn't know how to reboot the computer.
But speaking specifically of the role of numbers in T20 cricket, where Rahul says that the...
If there again, Mahendra Singh Dhoni is an example.
Yeah, we'll come...
If you
yeah.
ask me, I have a lot of time for numbers. I'll talk purely as a commentator as well. You know, people have been hearing the same gyan from us for the last 10, 15 years. They want something new. And what's new is these kind of things, the revelatory numbers and performances of players. And our coverage, it comes at the bottom of the screen. And these are excellent, pertinent numbers. Suresh Raina a few years back had this weakness against the short ball. And then a little stat comes at the bottom that says that he scored most of his runs of the pull shot. So what was happening actually was more and more bowlers were bowling short to him and he had learned to score off the pull shot. So I found that extremely, you know, exciting, and I wanted that little scroller at the bottom to be center stage. So that's me.
Okay, Rahul, you wanted to say something there?
No, yeah. I mean, I'm just using this, but the just from someone who sort of looks at these things a little bit as a coach differently, yes, you might have said Suresh Raina has scored more runs of the short ball because he's been given the short ball. But can you calculate how many would he have scored if we had actually pitched them up? He might have even scored more than he did with the short ball. So while the number is nice to tell you that, yeah, Suresh Raina doesn't now have a weakness against the short ball, you might still need to bowl short to him, even though he scored the most runs of the short ball. Yeah. Because if you pitch it up, that 100 could become 200 strike rate. You know, so, these things are
numbers
incredibly,
can be looked at differently.
So it's, for me, I think the interesting thing is, and Sanjay, you know, I think it's not about nerds versus, you know, geeks. I think the critical thing for me is the people who are going to be able to make the best use of these numbers. How you read these numbers, what you get out of these numbers is going to be the future.
Enough, those people include Sanjay only.
Yeah, so when he says, what is the word, what is the use of word for yourself?
Guru.
So the Guru geeks or the people I think who are able to make sense of these numbers are going to be the most valuable people in the future. It's not the guys who are, we get a lot of numbers thrown at you.
Absolutely.
But the guys who can make sense of these numbers is the future.
Okay, brilliant.
Gaurav, we heard Rahul Dravid speak about why T20 cricket needs new stats and new analytics and new metrics. Why do you think the older numbers are not relevant anymore? Why can't we just talk about average economy rate, strike rate, and the usual parameters that we know cricket?
So, first of all, there's a lot of confusion if whether T20 is actually a form of cricket or it's a completely new sport. We need to look at it like a new sport. Yes, to a certain extent, it is a new sport, but the fact is that runs and wickets still remain the same. But the way you measure averages and strike rates are it was all measured to measure consistency. In T20, consistency is not that important. So if you look at average, it measures consistency. Strike rate measures speed. So sometimes T20 throws up different challenges. A strike rate for an opener and a strike rate for a middle order is completely different. Average technically really doesn't make sense at all, according to me. So these were some of the main reasons why this is a problem we wanted to solve, and which is why when Superstats even came about. And obviously, Superstats takes into account situations. Let's take a player coming in chasing, and whereas the player coming in batting first. You have a target for a chasing team. You don't have any target for a team batting first. So how do you, why should we equate both together? Because both are completely different situations. If I'm chasing 120 in 120 balls, it's completely different from trying to set a target of 180 and then realizing in the middle of the innings, oh no, it's a 140 wicket and I start playing for 140. So another thing in T20 is the pitch. How do you bring pitch into the equation? Is by seeing how the others have done compared to what an individual batsman has done. So if everybody's scoring at, say, 110 and you're scoring at 150, that means you're way above par on that particular wicket. That is one way of mathematically showing how the pitch behaves. So these are some of the challenges we found in T20, and we thought of trying to bring this in place. And then identifying who's the most impact player. Some bowlers bowl the easy overs between 7 and 15 where the field is spread. A guy actually bowls and gives 10 runs an over in over number 19 when, say, 18 and 20 went for 16 runs an over. So that means
we're comparing a Bumrah and Ashwin and trying to give them an equivalence or trying to make them on one platform.
Yeah, or even if you compare a Bumrah with an Umesh Yadav bowling in the death, when the average run rate in the death is about 10, but somebody goes for 8, that means you've done your job. Or let us look at it while chasing. When a team is chasing, the required run rate is 14, and I scored 12, I've actually not done my job. So you try to maximize your runs as per the required run rate. So these are things we have taken into account, and that automatically builds pressure on the other person. We've seen that with players like Rahane and Parthiv Patel, who actually start off well, score the 3-4 boundaries, but they play a lot of dots. And that puts added pressure on the non-striker, and then he has to take a chance, and if he gets out, he's blamed for it. Sometimes the non-striker has to be blamed for it. So these things come out through Superstats. So which is why we needed new numbers, new metrics, and it needs to catch on with fans and our readers and people who are following the game. So that's very important. Otherwise, the game is not going to change.
Absolutely. I mean, man of the match awards, for example, 246 runs scored to be chased down. Virat Kohli gets 100, gets the man of the match award. I was suggesting Kuldeep Yadav. 246 on an Indian pitch is a great bowling effort. India won the game when they had the opposition all out for 246. Kuldeep Yadav took 3 key wickets. I think Superstats will bear that out. And that is where I've always been at loggerheads with this man of the match.
Don't commentators usually pick the man of the match?
Yeah, 5 guys, and I'm always the one who's trying to get the bowler's impact on the game, you know, which Rajesh and all these guys are pointing out. Sambit, sorry, you were saying.
No. I said what the traditional numbers do. They'll still be there. I'm not saying that averages and strike rates and then economy rates are going to go away. What smart stats or super stats will do, they'll add a quality of the layer of value and quality. And you would be, you know, Sanjay sort of referred to that you can actually equalize batting and bowling performances now.
Sure.
And you can put a number, like, I think that one of the most exciting for me from smart stats is the quality of performance. So you could actually produce, as we have a traditional scorecard, which sort of batsman and bowler, you could never, we could never
compare,
decide who has the greater
who
value.
Has had a greater impact on a game.
So the value to contribution to win is a factor that you can look at the scorecard and look at. So the exciting part is it's for the geeks. It's also for people who have casual interest in cricket.
Because we use the word impact a lot. You know, we said, you know, he made the impact, the match-winning impact. And nobody knows, you know, what we're trying to say here. Because you recognize the guy who's made the pertinent contribution, Jadeja, in that India-Pakistan quarterfinal at Bangalore. I think Sidhu got the man of the match award for a 90. But Ajay Jadeja's innings was the difference between two sides on that day.
Okay. So I'll just finish with this.
Yes.
That it's not that we're replacing anything. We are, in fact, providing tools and quantifying and validating cricket wisdom. There are things that you or anybody who follows cricket well can see, but the numbers don't reflect that. So it's actually smart stats will validate your opinion, his opinion.
It shouldn't be perceived as numbers that are taking over.
No.
In fact, they're only facilitating or further validating what cricketers generally believe.
There is a chance that could happen, but it's important, as Rahul said. That is, I think,
it becomes the responsibility of the storyteller. Then,
like US politics is just about numbers, isn't it? When they're looking for any political campaign backing the winner, they just look at data and looking at, you know, Trump's popularity.
Your smile suggests that.
No, I just think, you know, just blindly using numbers obviously would be a big mistake.
Yes.
But it would also be a mistake to just ignore numbers as well. I think, you know, when you're making decisions, and I'm sort of, for me, numbers is not so much about looking back.
Sure.
So in the position that I'm actually more excited and interested in numbers that help me make decisions.
Yeah. I just want to ask Rahul, actually, because he believes in the numbers a lot and uses it well. Any instance of selections that you made as coach where you use data and make a call that, you know, the pundits from outside, the gurus felt, you know, what's happened?
Okay, just maybe going back to a while back at sort of Rajasthan Royals, I mean, Brad Hodge was a good example. I probably said it somewhere, used it somewhere. I think, I can't remember which IPL it was, but maybe it was the third or the fourth IPL. And, you know, we at Rajasthan Royals, obviously at that stage, very much a budget team. And, you know,
still are.
Yeah. I think they spend a lot more money now that I've quit. but, you know, they hardly spend any money. And we're looking for a sort of middle order batsman to fill up. We didn't have any middle order batsman. And Brad Hodge's name came up in the auction list or the auction, this thing. And, if you just looked at Brad Hodge's numbers, vis-a-vis the IPL, you know, at that stage, he had played at KKR. He had played, I think, in Kochi. He played for two or three other teams. And his numbers weren't great. I think his strike rate was 105 or something like that. And his average wasn't good. His numbers weren't great. And, you know, we looked at him. But one of the interesting things, as we were looking at his numbers and we looked at it closely and we looked at why he's so sort of successful in say, you know, overseas or in the BBL. One of the things was that he really struggled and his strike rate really came down because, you know, he struggled against left-arm spin. For one thing, he struggled against left-arm spin. The two venues that he played in those days, you know, not the Kolkata now, that, you know, the Kolkata of the early days of the IPL, which is to turn square. Which is to turn square. And he had played.
No.
and at Kochi were, you know, turning wickets.
Yeah.
And so we looked at those numbers and said, maybe, you know, there's something to it. And then just looked at the position in which we would try and protect him and bat him in a position wherein one of the things we did notice as well is Brad Hodge's ability to play quality fast bowling was exceptional. His ability to take down, and he had in that his career, obviously a very good batsman, very successful batsman for a reason, because he could take down quality fast bowling. So we chose to pick him in the auction and bat him only in the last five overs of a game. A lot of people looked at us and said, you know, why are you doing this? This is a guy who's averaging so much.
Very late.
Look at his average in T20 cricket. Look at his numbers. But, you know, nobody was looking at it sort of that carefully. Nor was Brad Hodge. When we first told him you're only going to bat in the last 30 balls of a game, he looked at me and said, you know, why do you want me to do that? Give me, you know, coach, give me, let me bat at number three. I'll score you 450 runs in a season.
So if you tell him that data suggests you're not good against left arm spin, does he buy into that?
Or not
does
initially, he... not no. easily. Hmm. That's, I think, the challenge. That's where I think more and more stats and more and more research into stat is going to help. Because it's going to help coaches to be able to convince players that's not, at that time we didn't have the help of a lot of these things. We were just going on some of the basics, numbers and stats that we had. And we were able to convince him that his batting in the last five overs was best for him and best for the team in the IPL. It might not be the same in the BBL. It was best for him in the IPL. You know, he won us a few games. He didn't buy into it initially. I said, I don't want your 450 runs that you'll get me at three. I want 200 runs at 160 strike rate against Dale Steyn, Mitchell Johnson, Ravi Rampal, these kind of guys, Malinga at the back end. And he won us two or three games. He played for Australia in a T20 World Cup, batting at number six in Bangladesh. He got back into the Australian team. You know, I think just stuff like that, you know, it was really stuff that was really, really
okay,
interesting.
I like that.
And we felt at that stage people were, you know, I think people have moved on from that. People are much looking at stats very, very better now and much more.
Okay, so that actually takes a nice discussion because there are two aspects to the use of data in 2020 cricket. One, when it comes to in-game, in-match tactics, and the other on how much it might facilitate the larger picture for franchises, auction tables, scouting and whatnot. Sanjay rightly points out there are still split schools of thought on the value of data for 2020 cricket. It's quite well known that MS Dhoni is not as big a buyer into it. I don't think Virat Kohli either or RCB are the kind that employ a lot into data. I know that you clearly seem like you rely on it, or rather you are where you welcome it to facilitate a lot of cricket argument. Where do you stand on the importance of it when it comes to managing 2020 cricket, in-game and outside?
I think again, strike that balance. So I think just using it blindly with numbers, also there's a human element to this. I think you can never forget there's a human element to teams. When you're managing teams and you're coaching teams, there's a human element to it. You can't just go blindly to a player and say, this is what the numbers say, so you shouldn't play. Or this is what the numbers say in this situation. You've got to manage an environment. You've got to manage a team. And that's, you know, so that's why I feel that, you know, geeks will never, or just play numbers.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry. You know, will never be able to completely take over.
Yeah.
Because you will, it does, teams don't run like that. Teams don't work like that. But even as a coach, you know, sometimes you also want captains who are not just going, like I said, there's a human element to it.
Yeah,
the numbers might say that bowl X on a particular day, but a captain on the field can get a feel that he's actually not for it, up for it today. You know, numbers can't quantify how someone's, whether he's having, carrying a niggle. Numbers can't quantify whether someone is not feeling up for it on that particular day.
Sure.
You can sense that
fair
on the
enough.
Field. So there's a mix of both. So as a coach, you know, I'm like, you know, as coach sometimes sitting outside, if captains take a gut call on the field, you sometimes do back them as long as you know that it's not just doing it blindly. So yeah, I think Dhoni and Dhoni especially, I think he gets that. He gets the feel of that better than
like you mentioned in this also the bowlers to come. If it's Bumrah and somebody Rashid Khan, then you make the difficulty factor that much higher. So I quietly asked him, what about Bumrah's recent form? Because he has this reputation of being a game changer historically. But what if in the last three games he's gone for plenty of runs and his form in this particular match coming into
account. You know, it's taken into
and
account.
He told me that also is taken into account. So wonderful.
We heard Sanjay talking about Focaster and how this is an improvement on what we've seen. A lot of companies and a lot of brands have tried doing score predictions and win probability. That's been around for a while. But our Focaster, there are definite value adds, according to what Sanjay said, in terms of if a Bumrah and a Rashid Khan are left to bowl in the last four overs, the win probability for the batting side goes down by that much more because it takes into account their past records. It takes into account that they're really good bowlers at the death. Can you delve a little deeper into what this brings and what are the improvements on existing systems that Superstats and Focaster bring?
So what Focaster does is it again tries to capture match situation. Two key features of Focaster is one is momentum, where in T20 it plays a big role. If a player starts hitting a couple of sixes or the last four overs you start seeing people play completely different cricket, that gets captured in Focaster. The other thing is the type of bowlers and the way a team approaches an innings. For example, if Rashid Khan has an over left or Bumrah has a couple of overs left, I usually like to see them out and try to attack. Even though that might be a wrong approach because you don't need to see out bowlers, but sometimes you play the reputation of a bowler.
Similarly, if a Pollard is batting and he backs himself to hit sixes, And he might think that playing out a Rashid Khan is a good strategy. We've seen that in the IPL already. That sort of thing also is taken into account, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you take the example of Dhoni against Rajasthan Royals, he played out Jofra Archer completely, even though it was a death over. He just played him out and then started hitting 29 of Unadkat. So he knows he can make up for 2 overs in 1 over. But again, that comes from supreme skill. Mathematically, you can never ever predict that somebody is going to score 29 because we take into account what's happened earlier, historically, and what's happening currently. But what the model does, it at least accounts for that. It accounts for the fact that there are very good bowlers bowling and who don't give usually that many runs in an over. And also we take into account head-to-head in that particular phase of a match. So if somebody has a great record against, like if you take Narain versus Dhoni, he's never scored a boundary in history of IPL. So you don't, suddenly the model will not expect Narain to, Dhoni to score, say, 20 runs of Narain. So it will factor certain things. So that way we have improved the model. And a lot of, most models, based on what I've read and based on what I've seen, focuses a lot on venue. Venue, according to us, is a very, very, very dynamic number. An RCB, say a Chinnaswamy ground of 2017 is completely different from a Chinnaswamy ground of 2018. So when you look at, if you take last 3 years' numbers, the average is going to be pulled down.
Or a Chennai during a day game versus a day night game.
Absolutely.
That itself is a big...
That's a great point. A 4 PM game and an 8 PM game makes a difference. And nowadays, a lot of pitches are getting slow and the average score is not the ideal metric. So we have kind of not taken that too much preference. But what we have given preference to is the match, how the pitch behaves on that particular day. That gets captured by the run rates of the match, run rates of that innings. So, yes, you might question saying that what if some team plays badly? But that's going to happen very rarely. It's not going to happen every single day. So those things will kind of nullify towards the end. So, yeah, so that's what we have taken into account. Obviously, a lot of other questions which were posed to us before was about dew. You know, weather and dew are something you really can't really factor in. But what you can maybe give in the future extension of this model could be about giving some weightage to dew or giving some factor if we can actually arrive at data for 2-3 years where this ground always the dew settles in at this time and becomes easy.
Yeah, that also gets accounted for in the score as well, which is the parameter that we're taking anyway. So for the probabilities that you're working out for forecaster, whether it's first inning score or win probability, what's the historic period which you're looking into for IPLs or T20s? How many years of data is it taking into account?
So one interesting development while building the model was we found that in 2015 there was a major inflection. A lot of run rates went up, the death over phase run rates went up. So we decided the game has shifted after the World Cup maybe. Because that was a time when field restrictions changed in ODIs as well. So people were hitting a lot of sixes. Six hitting became more and more important. So yes, so that's why we started taking data from 2015. And we saw certain unbelievable things being done towards the end of a chase or towards the end of an innings. And we are seeing, in fact, even more unbelievable things happening this year. We've seen 50 runs scored in the last 3 overs. 60 has become the new norm in the last 4 overs, it looks like. This year's 20th over run rate as we speak is 14.85. So that's incredible. So yesterday, the other day when Pollard chased down the score, we saw he scored down 15 of the last overs. So things changed dramatically the game. So we have accounted for 3-4 years, and I think the model will keep changing. As the game evolves, the model will also be changing. And one example I would like to share is about the RCB-MI game, which happened in Chinnaswamy earlier this year, earlier during the IPL. With ABD and Kohli were there. Almost every model which I saw, which came, predicted RCB to win. But
Bumrah and Malinga are still...
Yeah, Bumrah and Malinga were there. And most models expect these batsmen to keep batting. So we obviously try to figure out when they are likely to get dismissed. And we kind of dismiss them after a certain number of balls which they average,
so that's,
they play.
That's the length of his average T20 innings.
Yeah, length basically. Of an average T20 innings at the time at which he actually came into bat and so on and so forth. So we actually gave Mumbai a much bigger chance almost throughout that innings.
I like what you said about managing the players. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the two of you strike me as the kind of people that didn't mind having a look at numbers to try and create, validate or further make a cricketing point. Is the modern day player as receptive to data and numbers, or do they just dismiss it? How hard was it? Or do you find different characters?
Again, as we're getting better and better at numbers and more, you know, geeks, and we have to, and we have to acknowledge that.
The geek is being said as a positive thing here.
In this environment.
Wear it as a badge of honor.
In this environment, it's a very positive thing.
Yeah.
other than the six guys from here, from IIT, I'm not sure many people here understand cos and tan theta and all of that stuff. It lost me at ninth standard, boss. So,
and you know, IIT is a new thing for us in the cricketing world. IIM.
Here they're legends. In this company, you know, with journalists and artistic people, these guys are legends.
He's used to IIM company more than IIT.
Until now, we had representation of IIM in cricket. Now, finally, we have IIT.
Sorry, I beg your pardon.
Yeah. Sorry, but coming back to it, yes.
As more and more people are putting time and research into this, and more people are doing stuff like, you know, this and the kind of work Rajesh and all do, I think it becomes more and more believable and more trustable for players as well. You know, I think then players can look at this and say, yeah, you know, yes, you're not just throwing around numbers at me. There's stuff gone on behind this that makes sense. If you're telling me that, yeah, I might be averaging so much, but actually at this phase in the game, your strike rate wasn't good enough. You know, why wasn't it good enough? You know, my strike rate was 140. But you know, in the critical phase in the game between 8 and 12, I'm just giving you an example, just kind of conversations we sometimes have. Between 8 and 12, actually, you needed to be at a much quicker strike rate vis-a-vis somebody else in the game or vis-a-vis what the opposition has done. You can have those conversations once, you know, people
have something to back it up.
You have something to back it up. So that's what's interesting for me, and that's why.
Finish.
No, go ahead.
Just a quick question to Raghu.
Yeah,
I'm not going to call him geek in on his
don't say that.
That's okay.
But this is meant more for the fans and television viewers than cricket teams.
I think there are two or three things here. One is, of course, when we judge the quality of a performance. I think it's for everybody. It's for the fans. It's also for the cricket team. The super stats, the real strike rates or the economy rates. I'm sure it'll be very, very useful for teams. Because every team now employs data analysts. And they use all this data already. So it'll be, will not...
It takes us
maybe
to
maybe there's a business there for Ramesh to take forward.
Maybe. Yeah. Takes this, but this takes us actually to a nice part of just the broadcast value of data. You know, which is, I think, I don't know how much data is just used to drive a story that the fans would obviously be interested in, and how much the cricketers may or may not endorse. And
Television is ready to enhance the viewers' experience, because at the moment, I think, we are all sort of frantic in our efforts to put the show on the road, on air. And nobody's really going into the creatives of the coverage. You know, we're just happy because it's a live event and we put it on air and seamlessly it gets seen by people. We are happy. And I've always felt, because I've had more time, you do your commentary stint and you sit at the back and you're thinking, the producer is completely occupied, the director also constantly has got his 23 cameras to deal with. Who is looking at creatives and taking the experience forward for the viewer? That's where I think the only way, because people are now tired about a commentator saying, you know, he got out because his feet didn't move. He didn't commit himself onto the front foot. People are going to sleep.
And
with
if
that
it's the same commentator saying it for 30 years, then even, kidding.
I'm only 21, so I can't. 20 years, so 9 years. Pass,
yeah.
So if you have some exciting number, and I think IPL is followed more by such people who are fascinated by number than guys, watch one day cricket, for example.
That's where Sanjay is showing the geekiness in him.
Now it's coming.
He's the kind of commentator who, like he says, I'm the coach who looks at numbers. He's the commentator. I know other commentators. Yeah, half an hour. Oh, it's not my half an hour. Oh, it's my turn. Okay, let's go in.
So that
I do a good job of it, but don't get me wrong.
So Rahul was with us for about 18 months, no, as commentator, and then
obviously.
Ultimately,
just let this go. Okay, come. Carry on.
No, see, he is very conscious about why we are all here. So
ultimately, it's a storytelling tool for the fans. So we can tell better stories with the numbers. We are never going to say that the numbers are absolute.
Sure.
We'll always recognize that there's skill and there's human instinct and there is something that
almost goes without saying.
Yeah, and when you of course forecast a probability.
Yeah.
We're never going to claim that it's going to be 100%. But it'll
see, numbers are so important. For example, a very simple evidence of Vivin Richards as the batsman in the 70s and 80s. You know, great batsman, everyone said, one of the top batsmen in the world, cricket. But the distance between him and the other players around his time, you know, people just imagined it. Then you look at a very simple stats guru or, you know, strike rate. Gordon Greenidge in his one-day career, guess what his strike rate was? 67 or 68. Strike rate in 50 overs cricket. Vivian Richards in the 70s and 80s and a bit of 90s, strike rate of 90 in that time. So that is how you sort of convince people. So I don't go on air or write columns about saying Viv Richards is the ultimate. You put these numbers and the numbers speak for themselves.
Do you,
I mean, it's incredible.
To wind up this part of the chat on just the value of data and broadcast, with the way broadcast seems to be reinventing, more toys, more gadgets, touchscreens and whatnot, how big a role do you see data playing in it? Do you see, and are you of the opinion that commentators from whichever era must also buy into it, welcome it, therefore that will enhance the storytelling? Sometimes that comes
there. There are generally 6 or 7 commentators in any coverage, and there are at least 2 or 3 or maybe 4 who are interested in data, so you'll get that kind of balance.
But let's say Superstats comes into the commentary
box
tomorrow.
I'll be very excited.
A little time. It'll have to be welcomed first by the commentator for then that be picked and told in a story. You'd be keen on that?
Very keen, because I've always talked about impact. And when I look at 50 overs cricket, and when you look at the top batsmen in 50 overs cricket, we look at aggregate runs. And that is something that I hate about 50 overs cricket, because there's no Yuvraj Singh there in that list. I mean, he was one of the greatest one day batsmen that the world has seen, but you only look at aggregate runs when you look at top one day batsmen. And these are guys who had the clout.
And they had it easy, these top 3, yeah, they had the clout.
If you bat at number 1, 2 and 3, you will end up becoming a great one-day batsman, which is a wrong way to look at a great one-day batsman.
You go with that? You need to have the clout to keep batting top 3 one-day cricket through your career?
Well, yeah, I mean,
I'll finish with Bob.
It's also partly performance, but I mean, I agree in the sense, I do agree with Sanjay in the sense that, and I think people are beginning to see that now. The big people, and that's where numbers are really helping.
I'll finish with one sentence here. I think the beauty of Smart Stats is that it evaluates the performance within the context of that game.
Sure.
So you get a true, so that's where Viv Richards' performances in that era, in that sort of, in those games will come across, I'm sure, when we run Super Stats over one day, cricket will be validated.
The reason I'm stressing so much on why it would be important for even the commentators, like Rahul says, who's going to make sense of those numbers, and they need to accept it. From your initial questions, I think luck was the big contentious thing, you know, the subjectivity on who applies it as an opportunity lost or not, what constitutes luck or what doesn't. So I'm just thinking now, if we can maybe take this conversation just on the luck aspect. Players tend to view luck very differently, and the role that it plays than, say, us sitting from the outside, where we say, oh, this guy scored his... Steve Smith got that 100 in Pune because he had 6 drop chances, and that's what made it. But I still saw cricketers voted as the ESPN Cricket Info Test Performance of the Year. So you guys don't care about drop chances and whatnot. For you, it evens out, perhaps. So it's one of those old sporting adages. Are you welcoming this quantification, this pioneering quantification of luck for the first time?
As I said, you know, we've been giving the same shit to people, you know, for a number of years on television. So it's time that we, you know, add another feature
shade
to it.
Shade, yeah.
And this is, you know, absolutely Rahul, that
luck,
I'm excited.
Luck in cricket, where do you look back at your career and ever think of, oh, you know, I got lucky here, or this was happened because I was lucky, or are those the things that don't even come into the mind of a sportsman? I can see Sanjay already nodding, saying no, he was very lucky.
I think you've got to acknowledge luck, and you've got to accept that you're lucky. I mean, Sanjay's here, maybe I will say it, but...
No, please say it. Let's go back.
I mean, I just look at my own career, right? I mean, I look at how I started my career. I started in 96 in Lords. Yeah. You know, the only reason I played that particular test match was because Navjot Singh Sidhu decided to leave the tour. And Sanjay Manjrekar got injured. You know, I mean, we can... Now it's easy, you know, I've played amount of cricket and... But if you go back to 96...
Now it was not actually an injury.
Yeah.
I just wanted the world to see Rahul Dravid. Yeah. And I've always been that kind of a guy, making the sacrifices.
Thanks, Sanjay.
Finally, I had to leave it. Couldn't keep it, you know, it was bothering me for a long time.
No, because... there's no way. I mean, Sanjay, you know, I was... Sanjay Manjrekar, even if he had scored 0-0-0-0, he was not going to miss a test match. I mean, he was not going to be dropped from the team. There's no way. No chance, Sanjay. It's easy to say it now, but not in 96. You know, this is the guy who had conquered Imran and Waqar and Wasim and you know...
In Thank God there was no luck index. Huh,
okay.
Because that's the only series that people talk about, Sanjay's great performance in Pakistan. If the luck index was there, they would have seen Ravindra Raja dropping catches at second slip. And that would have been accounted for and...
So that's interesting.
So like I'm saying, I get an opportunity to play that game.
Yeah.
I score 90, get 80 in the next game. I come back a different player. I don't get an opportunity to play those test matches. I come back, I'm back of back in domestic cricket. Yes, you can say, and I just don't want people to feel that, you know, I'm just attributing everything to luck. The 5 years of domestic cricket that I played before that, the number of balls that I hit, all of that I did, maybe put me in a best position to capitalize on that opportunity that I got. But I just needed the luck to get the opportunity. So it's not, I'm of the belief that it's not, you can't just say I'm just going to be lucky all the time and play like that. But I think you, and most of us in everything, will sit back and acknowledge and look at our careers and say, yeah, I had a bit of luck there. I had a bit of chance.
That's a different kind of luck that Rahul is talking about. Luck from outside the cricket field.
Yes.
Drop catches, umpiring errors. I think the players take it in their stride because it's something that they're trained to do right from your school days. You couldn't complain to the coach saying that, you know, umpire gave me a wrong decision. He would say, why did you play cross-batted? Why did you give the umpire the opportunity? So players tend to take luck in their stride more than people watching from outside. Umpiring errors is more of fans' angst than so much the players.
So never in a Mumbai dressing room did you all ever feel that one batsman used to always have it lucky with the umpires, never given out?
No, that happened. That is not luck actually. That is...
but one, you never hear this one. There was a game, I think Mumbai lost to Haryana. And was a guy got 200 runs. Every Mumbai guy will tell you that those are the most luckiest 200 runs and we should have won that game. And oh my God. Any guy will tell you that.
See, like Dilip Vengsarkar would play like this and there would be a feather and the keeper would take a catch and how was that? And he would glare at the umpire. The umpire would say no. Now that's not an umpiring error. So that is why you need players in your panel to look at umpiring errors in
I like that you mentioned Sanjay would never have been dropped in spite of a run of four scores. I believe.
In a way that you said, tongue in cheek. Yeah. Sanjay Manjrekar was, he was a big name.
There's a time I believe in 2008-09 when you were also a half decent name, but you felt that if it wasn't for a little bit of luck that you also could have.
Yeah, if I go back to my career in 2009, and again, maybe because I was a big name, I got given that extra opportunity. And it was a test match in Mohali. I had a really bad run of scores in 2008 and 9, and I was struggling, you know, I wasn't really getting many runs. And I was on the verge of being dropped, and maybe because I was a big name, and I got that extra opportunity. The extra opportunity was in Mohali. We won the test match in Madras when, you know, Sachin got 90 and Veeru got those quick runs and chased 300 plus
against England. Yeah.
Against England, I get that one opportunity against England at Mohali, and I'm batting at number 3 and Stuart Broad bounces me early on in
was
my
it Anderson was it was it Broad?
I think it was Broad.
Broad. Okay.
And I hooked. It was a top edge and it sort of just, and as soon as I hit it, I think, oh God, I'm out again. And it sort of just falls, Matt Prior, and I think the fine leg sort of running thing, and the ball just falls in between them. And I go on to get 100 in that game and have pretty good couple of more years of international cricket, including 300s in England. I'm sure if that catch goes into Matt Prior's hand, which could have happened that day, I would have been dropped. I mean, I wouldn't have gone on the tour to New Zealand. Well, it's easy to say now, but you never know. At least you give them a very good chance for that to happen.
You know, so that's such a diverse view on how they sort of view luck. But for us, it's from the outside. And I'll come to you again, Raghu. Just when you devised this and you went to Luck Index, that's probably one of the, I would think one of the more challenging aspects of Superstats. But as an outsider, did it in any way change your view of how you see the games? You're a keen cricket follower too. But when you were applying this, you know that there's a chance the cricketers might look at it very differently.
It is. So we are looking at it very mathematically and then trying to see how do you quantify something which is looking so unquantifiable to a number. So clearly, I think as a player, you don't really think about it. You have to get past this. But as a fan, you really want to know who really played without a chance, right? That is always a gold standard in some sense in our head. So how do you compare someone who got 3 drop chances with one who got 1, and then someone scored 90, another one scored 70, right? So this is a very difficult thing to quantify. So the challenge of that was very interesting for us. So mathematically quantifying something like this is it's a real challenge.
What's actually going to work a lot for viewers is the forecaster. It's a very simple thing. It's been around for a while, but I can see, like, my son is not a cricket fan, but when he watches cricket with me, he's looking at, you know, the wasp that New Zealand coverage had, winning percentage. And that is the thing for him, you know, and I think that is going to be the one that will be viewed and looked at a lot, and people will pin their hopes on that. So if that continues to be very accurate, I think so you've cracked it.
Was that, look, maybe you can talk a little bit more about forecaster, because like Sanjay is right, it might very well be that that's something that fans get gripped on the most, just the percentage, the chances of winning.
In fact, forecaster was born out of luck.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to quantify luck, that's why we had to simulate what would have happened. You know, it's easy to say that you had six drop chances, but what was the impact of that luck? That's how the forecaster came in.
The forecaster probability, another interesting nugget is, so we looked at actually traditional probabilities of teams winning from different situations and so on. And so we are looking at IPL data, and then we found something really startling. Up to 2015, things that were thought of as unwinnable situations started becoming winnable by a large number, right? So 40% probability of winning from a situation became close to 70% after 2015. So we are talking about, so I've heard this in the commentary box many, many times where people say, don't worry about the number of runs you have to score in the last four overs. Have enough wickets in hands and you will win, right? That is borne out actually by the data. Past 2015, if you were trying to score 50 runs of the last 4 overs with enough wickets in hand, your probability of winning was very close to something like 70-80%. Prior to 2015, it was very different. So the forecaster has both the probability data from the past and the forecasting that we do based on the current match, and it's an average of both. So we hope it will be highly accurate as we score more and more games.
And I think these things will keep changing, you know, because as skills improve, and that's where one of the things that data, I think, again, speaking from a coach's perspective, you know, more from a perspective of sort of when you have numbers, when you can show people that these are the areas that they need to work on, or six hitting ability, you know, the value of a six hitting ability in T20 cricket, you can easily go up to someone and say, look, these are the numbers. You need to be able to, if you want a batting in these kind of positions, we need this many boundaries. Your boundary rate is so much. You need to up it. That challenges players to improve their skills. You know, and that's the part that interests me, I guess, in a lot of ways.
So there certainly seems to be an appetite for more data, or more relevant data perhaps, in sport from Rahul, Sanjay. Raghu, must thank you for all the hard work that you've put in along with your team at IIT Madras. Sambit, last question to you. What's next for Superstats?
I mean, we've done 2020, so World Cup is coming, so there'll be Superstats for ODIs, which is already in the works, and Raghu tests. Yeah.
So maybe you're
kind of tied to us for next 3 years.
Well, maybe one last bit on perhaps the applicability of these relevant stats in 50 over cricket too, or is it something that will work more specifically, more impactful for 20 over cricket for you?
I think stats will work in any format as long as you keep, make it relevant and make those numbers, you know, use those metrics. You can't use different metrics, same metrics for the three formats of the game. If you can show different metrics, then yeah, I mean, no, definitely it's going to be used.
And 50 overs cricket needs all the help that it can get from outside. So that's the most boring format of all the three. So more super stats on 50 overs cricket. It's amazing. Actually, T20 cricket is the most vibrant and most exciting format, but it has the most elements in it, you know, to the game. Test cricket, hardly anything. 50 overs cricket needs all the external help possible.
The luck factor, though, would be slightly different. I'd say the luck factor in T20 would play more of a role vis-a-vis in test matches where the course of 5 days you can always the better team
chance
generally
to come back
win.
And yes, of course,
obviously these numbers tend to be looked at completely differently by cricketers. We heard Sanjay and Dravid speak about how they view luck in a game, since their view is completely different because they played the game for so long. It's something that will tend to divide opinion, how we are trying to quantify luck. What was the basis and why did we go into let's say an intangible like luck and trying to quantify it? Why in a T20 game? Is it because a T20 game luck factor matters a lot more?
Luck is a very, very interesting number. It's an interesting concept. It's a matter of most fan discussions, most fan banter. Most people say that this guy scored 100 because of his luck. In fact,
it's dropped by somebody.
Yeah, and it's not even something specific to T20. It's actually something which you can do for even ODIs, tests, anything. The format doesn't matter. The reason being, so many times we've seen this guy got a bad error, that's why we lost, that's why our team lost. So that was one of the reasonings for coming up with this concept. Yes, it's a fun concept. You shouldn't worry too much about the intricacies of it and the workings of it. But we have tried to take as many cases as possible, and we have tried to give it a big, great shot in terms of the number of events. So we've also we've identified almost close to 30 events of luck in a particular game,
such as it can umpiring be some, error.
Or yes, umpiring error, no ball not called, a wide not called,
stumping missed,
overthrows. There's so many events in cricket. It's a very complex sport. It's not like other sports where you have four, five really lucky events
which are being fed into by our scorers during a game. Basically.
Yeah, when that happens, and then we try to evaluate what happens if that event actually didn't happen. We try to simulate the match after that, and then we try to come up with a score. So obviously certain events work for a team, certain events work for the bowler, certain events work for the batsman. So these are some complications. We have tried to be as scientific and as close to reality as possible, which was definitely not easy, but we've managed to do that. So again, this will be work in progress. We'll find new events which are lucky. We saw almost four or five times the bails haven't fallen. We have taken that into consideration as well, but we might find something new. So the model will keep evolving, but as of now, it's a fun thing to discuss at the end of a particular competition. If you see that the most luckiest team wins a title always, which is not bad at all, because most you need that luck to win a title. It might be applicable in all sports. So that's something we want to study, and we want to identify that if the luckiest team in a league is always in the playoffs or always the top two in a table, that'd be great to know.
We've heard the cricketers weigh in on T20 stats and what they think of the new metrics, and like Ronak mentioned earlier, we're not getting them to endorse it, we're merely having a discussion with them, as Sanjay and Rahul spoke in detail about how T20 metrics and T20 data and stats are moving along. The one most important thing which Rahul Dravid mentioned is a lot of numbers get thrown at you, and it's how you interpret them that matters the most. Superstats is on ESPN Cricket Info, and we'll hear a lot more about it on Talking T20. We'll have the creators of these stats weigh in on what Rahul and Sanjay spoke about, and in detail about how we came about designing these metrics for T20. And remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, or wherever else you get your podcast from. That's all we have time for on this episode of Talking T20. Thanks to you, listener. Look forward to your company once again.